This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This year has been amazing for Aaron Patel. The CEO of iHandal, a leading turnkey engineering and contracting firm that specializes in improving energy efficiency, is slowly beginning to recognize that he is an entrepreneur thanks to the influx of accolades he's received this year alone. He won the EY Emerging Entrepreneur of the Year 2018 Malaysia Award. He made the Forbes 30 Under 30 list. And more importantly, Aaron and iHandal are slowly but surely working to make Malaysia carbon neutral. And to think, iHandal was created out of necessity from the innovative juices of a 15-year-old. To talk to us about how he took his company from operating out of the car porch of his home to providing clean energy solutions at more than 100 properties in 5 countries over the last decade, we have with us on Open for Business today, CEO of iHandal, Aaron Patel.
Hi, I'm Aaron. I'm the CEO and founder of iHandal, where we develop solutions that recycle and repurpose wasted energy.
Aaron, welcome to the show. Now, just to kick things off, when you look back at your entrepreneurship journey, does it sound crazy to you? I mean, I'm sorry to reveal your age on air, but you are 27 right now.
Yes.
And with all that you've done, does it feel surreal?
I mean, day to day, you don't really have time to look back, but once in a while, we do look back, and it's been an amazing, it's been almost 10 years now, and it's just flown by so fast. There's been so many ups and downs, and sometimes you think that we even made it and pulled through. It's really surreal looking back.
So, I mean, I could tell your story, but it would never sound the same. For listeners out there who haven't heard of iHandal and how it came to be, Aaron, maybe you could give us a refresher. Tell us your story again.
Sure. So, iHandal started back when I was in the final year of high school. So at the age of 15, my dad suffered an illness where I had to take over his trading business, which dealt with solar. So instead of pursuing my tertiary studies, I decided to take on his business, support our family. And I wasn't really contented running a typical trading business. And that's when I integrated what I was learning in school back then, which was thermodynamics and heat engines, and decided to take a trading business to more into a engineering and an energy conservation business instead. And from building our own systems in the car porch of our home to now serving, I think, more than 100 clients across 5 countries. It has really been an amazing 10 years.
And since then, how much has your product or range of offerings changed? This kind of solutions that you provide, you know, from the start, I mean, when you started, you had a solution that converted heat in car parks into hot water for the hospitality industry, right? So since then, what kind of solutions have you developed? What kind of projects are you working on right now?
So when you first started up, it's always our core has always been the same. It's all about heat, right? So no matter what we do, it's always related to thermal. So when we first started out, it was really committed to developing systems that produce hot water until we ran out of hotels to do. So that was an interesting problem we had.
Okay.
So about 3-4 years ago, because we control majority market share in Malaysia, we kind of found ourselves in a saturated market by ourselves. And we had to evolve and find out what else we could do. And that's when we found out there was a wider application, not only growing regionally, which was a natural way forward, but finding other ways people could actually require heat.
Okay.
Right. And you always hear that, why are you doing heating in a country like Malaysia where we're surrounded by heat, right? Mm. Everybody requires cooling. But people forget cooling is the removal of heat. And the core of that process is how do you more effectively remove heat, right, to get the cooling that you need. And that's when we found out many other clients, like in a lot of industrial clients, actually needed our services as well. And it was highly customized, where they didn't only need hot water, but they needed heat for various things like for hygiene purposes, for humidity control, for various applications that we've seen today.
So from hospitality, I understand the first sector that you moved into was healthcare.
Yes.
Tell us a bit more about that.
So we worked with a couple of hospitals, for example, like the Gleneagles chain, and we actually managed to grow in that niche to hospitals as far as Sri Lanka. So one of the largest private hospitals in Sri Lanka uses us. So we've always been very good in working verticals, just because all our business is generated through referrals. We don't actually go out to market, but a customer introduced another. So that's how we actually found ourselves all the way in Sri Lanka, because of the healthcare space where Gleneagles introduced another hospital and one another and led us all the way there.
Okay, we'll come back to the story on referrals in just a bit. But initially, that leap into the thermal heating industry from generally being in the trading industry dealing with solar, were there ever doubts that that pivot may not pay off? Because here you were like, you know, still in your teenage years, and there was a lot, you know, hinging on its success. You know, what was going through your mind at that point? You know, what gave you that confidence that this is the way forward for iHandel?
So it wasn't called iHandel back then. Mm-hmm. So it was my dad's old company with his partners. And it was a very small outfit. It was just himself with one or two people that helped him. So it wasn't really that much to move from, mm-hmm. right, to start off with. But we had a lot of negativity, even his partners, even family, friends around us. Everyone doubted that we should even be doing this to begin with. But I think together with my mom, she gave me a lot of encouragement when I was doing this. And she said, really, we had really no other choice, right? We had to make a business that worked to support ourselves, or there was nothing to fall back on. Mm-hmm. And that's when I decided trading business, the margins were tiny. And after doing it, I was really in the trading business for 6 months, right? And I saw it wasn't a way forward.
So you were working with your dad before this happened?
No, when he fell ill, I actually took over that business for a couple of months. Mm-hmm. So I was doing it. I was doing it day to day. So I went to school in the afternoon and then I was doing his trading business after that. So I managed that for a couple of months before I actually made that step to step out of that business, shut that down and evolve it into something else. Mm-hmm. So it's just because I couldn't see myself having a future sitting, just buying things and selling. It wasn't really exciting. It didn't get me out of bed every day. It was just like, oh, I'm stuck with this. So instead of having to deal with that, I decided, and with the encouragement of my mom, right, together, we started up iHandel and put into practice whatever we learned in school.
Why the name iHandel?
So I stands for innovation, and Handel is the Malay word for expert. So iHandel means experts in innovation. That's how we actually got what it meant. So the good thing is in Malaysia, you have that that background.
Yeah.
And when you go overseas, people think it's iHandel energy.
Oh. Yeah.
So it works both ways. You have that local touch to it, but it also works overseas.
Okay. So your business model back then, I read this online. You install the system, and if it works for the company, then they pay you. If it doesn't work, you take it back. Is that something that you would recommend other entrepreneurs with radical products or untested products to try?
So that business model came out because we couldn't sell it any other way. With something as radical where you could say we make claims like we could save 80% of your energy costs, right, for heating, it's very hard for people to actually buy in. Especially when we started in that period in the late 2000s, there were a lot of customers that that met with vendors that had very dubious claims that you buy this and it magically saves you money. And because of all of that around us, we had to find something that would really set us apart from all of that. And that's why we did it. You have to be really sure that your product works, and because I made it from the ground up, right, I was confident to do that. Whereas if you're not so confident and you're selling someone else's product, you better be careful, right? Because there's a lot of risk by doing that.
So, and the rate of returns would have to be quite high though, you know, to guarantee the success of that kind of model, that guarantee.
Yeah. So we have always guaranteed with a buffer. Right. So let's say we guarantee 80%. There's actually a buffer there. Mm. So we've always been sure. And what we guarantee to what the clients achieve is actually within 2 or 3% variance from what we calculated. So it's very fairly accurate.
So your first case with this model, this, you know, money back guarantee,
yep.
Who was it for and how did that work out?
So it was actually for Tune Hotels. It wasn't where we pitched it to them. We went in to them to sell a solution and we came out with this business model instead, because they wouldn't buy it unless it worked. So that's where the business model kind of came from a discussion with the CEO, where we tried to go in with this product and he wanted to help out a 17-year-old entrepreneur that's pitching to him, but he didn't want to do it where he just gave it, you know, to me. So he made sure that we worked for it. And we came out of the meeting where we were amazed where we won the order, but we're also scratching our heads, trying to figure out how we're going to fulfill it with nothing upfront and all the risk on our side.
And how did you do that? What was the execution like?
So I still remember we got that order at about 2 p.m. On one of those days. We received the order after that meeting. And then we went to a couple of banks, right, for the next couple of days, and nobody would finance us. It's a bit hard to believe when a 17-year-old comes to a bank, right, and asks, could you fund a project where it's, let's say, a couple hundred thousand ringgit, I need some money down, right? And they said, you have no education background, right? You have no engineering degree, right? There's no way we're going to fund you. And that's where I think it was quite still amazing, where a family friend that we've not met for many years said he just felt that he needed to call me and catch up. And he said, I felt like I needed to help you. Is there anything you needed? And he wrote me a check for 100,000 ringgit 2 days after at 2 a.m. in the morning, and he dropped it off. So that's actually how we started iHandal.
It's time for a break, but when we come back, we discuss iHandal's regional expansion and what a CEO in his 20s needs to master to manage and grow a business in today's world. CEO of iHandal, Aaron Patel, will be right back on Open for Business, BFM 89.9.
Bold, fearless, Malaysia. BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Open for Business. I'm Audrey Raj. One of my favorite young CEOs is with me today, possibly my favorite, Aaron Patel from iHandal. Aaron was forced to take over the reins at his father's solar panel trading company when he was just 15, and over the last decade or so has turned iHandal into a leading turnkey engineering and contracting firm that specializes in improving the energy efficiency of commercial and industrial buildings. Aaron, I read in an article in The Star that you said your first deal with IGB Corp was your most valuable form of marketing. And, you know, we're coming back to that story on referrals here. What happened there?
So with IGB, so we started with Tune Hotels first, and we thought we were going to be, you know, after the success with Tune Hotels, it was just going to kind of filter through the entire market and there was no more hardship. It was going to be one after another. Mm. What we learned was after Tune Hotels, it was about a 1 to 2 year gap before we got our next client, and that was IGB. So that was after, I think, cold calls and knocking about more than 100 doors before IGB came up. So once IGB went through, it was an existing hotel. So Tune was a new hotel, whereas IGB Mid-Valley was an existing property, and we really managed to show a before and after, a true success story where we helped save them, I think, about 80% on their heating costs for one of the hotels. And because of that success, right, the management was so happy with the savings, they actually started introducing us to other hotels around town. And just like that, we managed. It was like a domino effect. One by one hotel after another decided to become our clients.
So you just said that that two-year gap there, right, that you were talking about, you know, that was when you were pretty much a one-man show, correct? You know, and you were taking calls and you were servicing clients and you were also managing those specific solutions. And from there, I read somewhere as well that, you know, you said that you had one of those like automated phone call services, you know, where they would call you and then you see press one for this department, press two, and all the lines would be directed to you, right? So what was that challenge like when you finally had to employ staff and get people on board? And how old were you then? You know, how did they look at the situation?
So when you first start out, right, especially when something is bootstrapped with your own funds, you want to be as profitable as you can. That's when being a one-man show is great, right? Because you keep costs low and you kind of wear all the hats, right? There was one time I was driving the lorry. I even have a goods delivery license still on me, right? I used to deliver material to clients. But once you expand, you kind of get yourself stretched out. The biggest challenge is when you're so used to that is how to trust someone and let go, right? And I still remember that when we first hired people, it was to join our team. It was around 18, I think, 18, 19. And I was never really a great team player growing up, right? I thought I could do everything on my own. So that helped us start up, but that was something that I had to let go. Mm. And at 18, 19, finding engineers who were most probably 10, 15 years older than me, and then trying to get them to do what I wanted was really tough. I think it took us 2 or 3 rounds to get someone that really fit those values, that really believed that I could really lead them before we found the right person. Right? It wasn't easy. It was 2-3 times where there was it wasn't the right fit and we had to part ways, right? But it was a learning experience. So every one of those people that I met on those initial few years, they actually helped build me up as the leader that I am today.
So right now your factory is based in Shah Alam. What is your staff strength like?
So we're about 30 people in Malaysia and supporting us overseas as well. That's handling both all the different fields like engineering, that is helping us with design, back-end admin, and even manufacturing.
And how many properties are using your system right now? Do you have any figures?
Yeah, so we actually just crossed the 100 property mark this year. Mm. So by towards the third quarter of this year, we will be well beyond 100.
Okay. Have you expanded beyond just hospitality and healthcare? And do you see potential in other sectors moving forward?
Yeah. So that's when I said, like 3 years ago, when we ran out of hotels to do, that's when we tried to figure out what other applications. And just besides being just a hot water expert, we decided to become a pure thermal expert. Mm. So no matter what heating or cooling challenges, we'll figure it out. So since then, we've actually expanded to many sectors, all in the industrial space, whether it's semiconductors, food, so many different sectors. And what we always like to do is they give us a problem, we find a solution. So, I mean, that's what we've been doing. So that's how we've come across rubber, food, like so many different industries that we're in at the moment.
Are there any local competitors to iHandel at the moment?
So the unique thing about us is we cover such a wide breadth, right? So someone that could do exactly what we do, there's no one that could come close to what we actually offer. But individually, there are many companies that could do one part, but there's no one that ties it all together. So that's where we're very unique.
So, like you mentioned earlier, you are now in 100 properties across 5 countries. So that's Vietnam, Thailand, Sri Lanka, Singapore, and Indonesia, correct?
And Philippines recently.
And Philippines, okay. Yes. So, but Vietnam was your first overseas market, and you moved in, you ventured into Vietnam in 2012. Yeah. Why choose Vietnam first?
So it's actually our first successful expansion overseas, right? So before that, we actually went down south to Singapore, thinking it's our closest neighbor. And we realized it wasn't as easy as it was just crossing the causeway, right, to sell our solution. In any country, what we learned from that deal was if you don't have a reference in that country itself, they don't care how many properties that you have done anywhere else, right? They won't look just across the border in Johor. Even if you have 10 hotels there, it make no difference, right, to actually convincing the customers there. And it was really tough lesson to learn where we spent, I think, 1 year trying to convince clients and everybody didn't want to be the first, no matter if there was another 10 hotels, it was just across the border. And because of that, instead of moving to a business model that was based on setting up shop and then trying to sell, we went with clients that referred us. Mm-hmm. So how we got into Vietnam was an owner of a property here owned a property in Vietnam and brought us there. So he gave us that first test case in a new country and that's how we expanded there.
Okay, but for someone who ran everything by himself for years, do you find it even a little challenging not knowing what's going on every minute of every day at like your regional offices?
I mean, definitely. So communication is the biggest challenge, right? Letting go, like I said, when we first started, when you want to trust other people to handle these various things that you're doing, you really want to have that feedback, what's going on. So we have those systems in place now. It took some time to get them in place, right? But now we know what's going on. Wherever I know what's happening on in every offices, what my teams are doing, I'm kept updated.
Looking back, Aaron, what would you say were the key traits or resources that you had that made iHandel the success that it is today?
So I think one of the most important ones is being very resourceful and knowing how to learn, right? So from the very first system that we put together that was out of textbooks off Amazon, I still remember. So besides what I learned in school, we bought some books off Amazon and put it together, right? Learning how to learn that to all the different challenges we had, like learning how to manage cash flow, balance sheets, all this stuff is something that we learned along the way. There's nobody that came and taught us how to do this. It was something that we had to learn. So I've never taken I don't know as an answer or no. And it's something that we've really tried to instill in everyone that joins us, right? That's something that is a really strong point that we don't accept, right? If somebody just says, no, I can't do it or I don't know without first trying, that's something that we've really tried to move away from in our company. So that's one of the attributes. Second one is resilience. So over the last 10 years, right? So of course now, the last few years, we've had a lot of recognition. But when the first few years, when we first started, right, like I said, that 1-2 year gap without any projects. Mm. And even after winning projects, you face different issues, right? You have things like dealing with various clients. You have, financial obligations to meet as you grow. There's so many different challenges. And resilience, I think, is still a very key point where no matter how much you get knocked down, being able to get up the next day and still push forward.
So I know you worked with organizations like the Entrepreneurs Organization and Endeavor Malaysia, but what else did you do to kind of master the steep learning curve to manage a business and become a full-fledged CEO?
So a lot of the things had to do with learning, right? So before I joined Endeavor, I was with EO, right? And joining EO, it was still a very much a one-man show. I met the minimum criteria to join EO, right? Which is a certain revenue to make that cut. But I didn't call myself an entrepreneur. I still remember joining EO. I was shy to brand myself entrepreneur because I held that in such a high regard where I thought didn't do justice where everybody just call themselves entrepreneur without with just an idea, but to have some traction first, right? So I went in there trying to learn what it was truly to be an entrepreneur, and having that peer-to-peer learning support and seeing how other people took that basic idea and really pushed forward really motivated me to learn. So besides being inspired by EO, right? So a lot of resources that I tapped into. So one of the things that EO uses is something called Scaling Up. It's a tool by Vern Harnish that actually helps you structure your business to grow from a smaller company into a larger and to become a unicorn one day, right? Yeah. That's where that's the buzzword now, right? Or a decacorn now, yeah. Right? People have gone past unicorns, right? So it really gives you the tools to scale up, how to build communication with your team, how to have the right priorities aligning. So a lot of that had to do with learning, right? And learning how to be a proper leader and CEO.
So this year has been, I don't know what the term should be, but this year has been awesome for you, right? I mean, the EY Emerging Entrepreneur of the Year 2018 Malaysia Award, making the Forbes 30 Under 30 list. What has that experience lent to your growth as an entrepreneur?
So I still remember when we had that EY ceremony, right? And when we were even announced as top nominee, we went in not even believing that we would actually make the cut, right? Because EY has always been regarded as the most prestigious entrepreneur award, right? And we've thought we've had a great business, but do we really have what it takes to be a winner in such an amazing award? And having that confidence after winning that award is granted such reassurance to our team that whatever that we're doing is in the right direction, and has given us such motivation to really move forward. So instead of just looking at our immediate circumstances or the challenges that we've had, it's really motivated our team to look, what are we going to do in the next 3-5 years to take what we've already built, which is, you know, been amazing, right? And how do we take it forward to expand, not only regionally, but globally?
What about for you personally? I mean, do you finally feel comfortable calling yourself an entrepreneur after all these awards and all these accolades?
I think it came about towards end of last year after being recognized at Endeavor and also EY. I felt that I was worthy to carry that title finally.
Okay. So when you were last here at BFM, this is back in 2017, you mentioned that the goal was getting Malaysia to be carbon neutral. Yeah. How far away are we, and what needs to be done in order to get us there to be carbon neutral?
So Malaysia emits something about 200 to 250 million tons of CO2.
I don't even know what that looks like, or you know what that amounts to.
So the amount of trees is, I mean, it's significant, right? So what we have achieved is something that is in a single-digit percent towards that goal. So that's how big an aim that we have over the next 10 years, 10 to 15 years to get us there. So that would involve saving more than 200 million tons, like I mentioned, more than 200,000 acres of forest, something like the Borneo rainforest, to be able to offset that. So with the things that we do, although we don't actually plant trees, what we do is we actually prevent all the emissions from generating heat, right, from reaching the atmosphere. So we're doing our own part. So together with that and all the other priorities that we have seen that the new government has been putting in place, right, I think it's going to be something that's really achievable in a shorter time frame than we originally thought.
Other than the government, anything that, you know, small businesses, the businesses in Malaysia can do in order to help iHandel reach that target?
Yeah. So we've always been focusing on the larger players, right? And besides growing in that space, we have thought something about giving back to actually homeowners and the smaller businesses. So we're developing a digital solution actually to help people to really be part of this, but raising awareness of how much you use, how to be more effective, and actually teaching you. So we're launching a digital solution that actually incorporates what we've learned from the bigger commercial industrial spaces and bring that best practices back home, I think towards the end of this year, early next year. And having that, we think with that in place and having people be part of that movement, will really be able to help us to achieve what we want to achieve.
Okay, Aaron, and just before we go, what happens after this? You know, you've had early success. Your product now moves itself. You've scaled. What's next for an entrepreneur that has, you know, hit your stage?
So the most important thing is not to become complacent, right? So that's one of the things where, especially when you have early success, right, when you have achieved whatever that you initially had set out, right, to not become complacent. And that's something where I've heard time and time again from my mentors, right, you got to push yourself. And that's when it's not that we're not contented at what we've achieved, but we believe there's so much more that we could do, right? Because there's so many more years ahead for our solutions, and it's such a big application. So for us, looking for the next few years, we're developing new technologies as well, besides what we're already doing now, to bring it to a wider customer base. and actually to go across into countries and markets like Europe and the US, where we normally are the ones who benefit from them, but rarely have you heard of companies that go the other way and bring technology into those markets. So we want to be one of those proud Malaysian businesses or case studies that actually have done that, to bring something that's developed in Malaysia and expand it into those markets.
Aaron, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us, and I wish you and iHandal all the best in your future endeavours.
Thank you for having
me. To getting Malaysia to carbon neutral in 10 years, 15 years?
Yes, that's right.
I've been speaking with CEO of iHandal, Aaron Patel. Now, for more info on iHandal and their energy efficient solutions, you can check out their website, iHandal.com. And if you miss any part of this show, the podcast should be up on our website within the hour, also on the BFM app and on Spotify and wherever else you enjoy listening to your podcasts. My name is Audrey Raj, and on behalf of Aaron Patel from iHandal, thank you for listening to Open for Business, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.